Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Slay in Your Lane, the podcast. I'm Elizabeth Yufebenene.
And my name's Romy Adeg, okay?
And today we'll be talking about a range of topics, as we always do. But before we get to that, how are you, Yomi?
Ciao, I'm tired. I'm not even going to lie, I'm so tired. It's been such a long week. Like, I feel like the world has, like, inverted commas, pressed play. And, like, it just feels a bit early. Like, it feels a bit premature to me, to be honest, for us all to be getting back to business. So yeah, like, I've been in and out of central for most of the week so far, and I'm just knackered, mate. Like, I'm just not used to, I haven't properly, like, had to leave Croydon, which I've now accepted isn't part of London, pretty much, because obviously, like, the journey is, like, really, I'm really starting to feel it now that it's been so long since I've had to go to central. But yeah, I'm just not used to it anymore, and I'm super tired. It feels like the world's starting again. How about you, Paul?
Yeah, no, I was saying to someone, I totally agree, I was saying to someone today that the year has gone by really quickly, and a lot's happened in a short amount of time. So I can't believe that we have a whole other 6 months to kind of contend with. So I just pray that it's nice to us.
Please. And have mercy.
Yeah, exactly. We can't cope. But something that did catch my eye that you did send to me, which I did think was a bit weird at the start, was the August Alsina conversation that came out last week. And oh, I remember, God. I didn't even understand what it was about, but you know the situation, you know it quite well. So do you want to give the listeners kind of like a brief run through?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. Like, you know me and T. So, like, yeah, I've obviously been following this story for, like, several months. I mean, me and my sisters, when this came out, we were, like, we thought this was, like, an open, like, not even an open secret. Like, we genuinely thought this was, like, one of those rumours that, like, had been flying around for a long time, that, like, August Alsina, when he was sort of in his early 20s, was in a sort of relationship with Jada Pinkett Smith, because, you know, there's been, like, rumors about the Smiths for a while, saying that, you know, they're swingers and they like have a, like an open relationship or whatever, and then, you know, over the past few years there's been like a lot of talk about how August Alsina, who I think Jada met through her son Jaden, which is quite a weird dynamic, but yeah, like there's been rumors that they were like seeing each other for a bit. And I remember that he like released this song last year, and you know that there was this music video like accompanying it, and he literally was like text, like one of the graphics that he had in the video was him texting Jada. So I was like, oh, okay, so this has now been confirmed. And then yeah, obviously when I first saw like the clip of him and Angelique Yee and he was talking about it, I swear my initial reaction was so like, oh, okay, cool, like, oh, so he's now confirmed what we know. And then I saw her trending and was like, oh wait, so like I guess not everybody else is obsessed with T-Pages in the way that I am, that has just been waiting for this confirmation like for how many years, for how many months. So I just assumed everyone knew. But yeah, like that's the story. And like you know, obviously she's saying that she's gonna basically hold herself to account via a Red Table Talk, which would be very interesting. But yeah, you said you were just completely like knocked for six, and like weren't really across, I don't think you were across the whole like Smith fam, like Smith couple, like as swingers.
Not at all. And that's
so you were just seeing them as some wholesome, like, I mean, you can be a wholesome swinger, but yeah, like, maybe I feel like in this climate I have to say that, but
disclaimer. No, I'm actually, I can't get that image out of my head, and a wholesome swinger, it sounds like a job title. Honestly. But no, I remember when you sent it to me, I genuinely thought, okay, Yomi's mixing up names, because you said Jada and August. And I was
thought,
like,
oh, Will. That's a weird way to spell Will.
Oh, I was like, oh, oh, I was like, oh, Yomi's definitely mixed up that name. And I just kind of went on.
Kept it pushing.
My day. And then your older sister sent me another the clip, and I watched it, and I understood what you said earlier in the day, because I was like, what? This is crazy. and I just don't understand it. And it's just, there's so many facets of this, because there's like the, because I remember, we start speaking, and I said to you that if she's doing her thing, he is doing his thing, and you were like, of course. And yeah, so the bigger question is, this whole open relationship, is this, are we just looking at it as like, I don't know, we're not in the future, like, are we just a bit behind? Or is this just basically the future in terms of just how things should be? Because she was literally saying, we are not in that clip. She was like saying, we are not, or we're always going to be together, essentially. We're life partners. Mm. Is that just the way things are going to be? What are your thoughts on open relationships? Could you do it? Could you not? And is it just each to their own?
I love the fact, again, you're like, asking this as if you do not categorically know the answer. This is why we need to start getting people in, because honestly, it's just gonna be like, I think you know damn well what my views are, but it's like, I definitely feel like it's each to their own, for sure. Like 100%. Like, I feel like, do you, like, with Jada, when she was like, she's coming to, you know, spill tea on herself in terms of, like, you know, at the red table or whatever, like, I felt like, you know, clearly she feels like, I feel like she's able to hold herself well, I haven't watched it yet. It hasn't even come out yet. It hasn't been done yet. But, like, when it does come out, I feel like clearly she knows what she's doing. And it feels like there's been some sort of arrangement and understanding that they have. And for me, I'm like, if that works for you guys, do you, boo. Like, that's completely up to you. Like, you know, variety is the spice of life or whatever. So fair enough. Yep. But as for me and myself, I'm literally like, I saw someone online being like, they're a monogamy merchant. And I was like, oh, that is me to a T. Like, I'm very, like, casual generally. Like, I'm not someone that's like, oh, I've gone on a date with this person, therefore they're my husband. In fact, I'm the complete opposite to that. But once I'm in that relationship and that line is drawn, then it's like, that's it. Like, it's literally, there is... If to me, I'm very in or out. Like, if we're going to be seeing other people, talking to other people, that's absolutely fine. I can very much compartmentalize to make that work, but I would just not be in a relationship. The minute I'm in a relationship, then it becomes, I don't believe in, like, all exclusive, but we're like talking to, like, do you know what I mean? I don't believe in all exclusive, but we're not going out. Like, that is rubbish to me. I'm like, well, either in a relationship where we're not even going to look at anybody else, we've even got to be careful about whose pictures we're liking and why. But yeah, it's either that or it's absolute, like, singledom. Do you? So yeah, what about you? Let me ask this question as if I've never had this conversation. Like, what are you thinking?
So yeah, it's quite interesting, because my first boyfriend, or my first proper boyfriend, we were like friends before we kind of like became formal boyfriend and girlfriend. And I remember when we accidentally kind of like realized we liked each other, one of the things that I said to him was, we either commit to this and we become girlfriend and boyfriend and we are going to be together, or we literally like stay friends and just like, you know, continue like that. So I am not, so I'm very, you know how I am, I'm very, you know, like, I'm quite extreme. So either we're in this or we're not. So I couldn't imagine having an open relationship at this age with anybody. But that's the thing. I'm thinking maybe it's an age thing, because they've been married for a very long time.
Yeah,
they've had experiences that, you know, I just can't imagine. Like, they've traveled the world. They've done so many different things. And maybe my life is just a bit too boring that, you know, I'm holding on to this, you know, straightforward, let's just be together forever, like, fantasy that probably doesn't exist, like, in terms of just being together with one person forever. Because I don't know, we've had conversations about soulmates and all of that sort of stuff. And it's weird, because the way she talks about her and Will is like, they're soulmates. They are meant to be together. But maybe they don't, I guess soulmates sometimes evolve into just what she's calling a life partnership. So, I don't know, maybe that's the future. And I keep saying that as if it's changing my mind and how I feel about it. But I'm trying to play devil's advocate in this situation.
When I say sister, I'm literally going, we don't believe you. You need more people. When I say I don't believe you, I'm just nodding. Mm-hmm, that's true. Fair enough. Like, I know theoretically you believe this, but I'm like, sis, I've known you way too long about age. You'll be 80 years old and still ensuring that. I don't know what the grandma equivalent of Instagram would be, but like, I just know that you'll still be doing, checking that. You know, I think they've stopped that thing where you can like, I'm on Instagram enough to know, to be honest, because you know how I use that platform. I just post and go. But I'm like, I remember there used to be that thing where it was like, you could see what people had liked. I think they got rid of it. Right? So I'm like, I just know that like at 80, at 90, like whatever, if you're catching your significant other then in the wrong comment section, I just know what you're like. Like, I get what you're saying though. I think we're trying to be quite mature and theoretical and, oh, in theory, yeah, I totally get like back that, but like in reality I'm like, girl, like who are you playing with? Like, come on.
This is the thing. And yeah. I don't know, because the thing is like, soulmates is such a, like, what are your views? I know what your views are already, as we kind of established, but can soulmates evolve in that way where you may not want to be with that person like sexually all the time? Sorry,
I can't.
I'm actually pathetic, but you've created this, like, I guess, institution. I think that's the thing. Maybe I'm just too poor to understand what they're doing, like, because they're creating screaming. This it's Hollywood true. Institution. So divorce is going to probably be more expensive than, you know, than
the rich live a completely different life, isn't it?
Exactly.
They've got different priorities. It's very
uncoupling.
Much like, do you know what I mean? Consciously uncoupling, which, yep, to be fair, a conversation for another day, even my broadcast, you know, I'm on that. I'm very much on a unconscious coupling. Let's still be friends and like, let's still be in each other's lives as we move into these next phases with other people. Like, I'm on that hippie shit. But in terms of like, you know, soulmates and all that thing, it's funny because I think if anyone was ever to kind of potentially find themselves in that kind of position, like, of being like, you know, able to have like a significant other that I felt was my soulmate and like have other people fulfill other purposes, then yeah, I honestly think, again, theoretically I could be that person just because of what my attitude towards relationships is. But I think it's because I have a very clear kind of like demarcation between like relationships are not, and that might just be me being basic and like some rigid like Christian upbringing, or God only knows, like, I don't know, it could be like I'm not rich enough, as you said, to be able to get into these intricacies of like weird, like Hollywood, like, you know, units or whatever. But I feel like for me, like, yeah, like for instance, people that get funny about anything that someone that's not their boyfriend is doing, for me, you know my opinion on that, I'm always like, that's weird. Like, if you're seeing somebody and you feel like you can't be doing that, like, because we're, like, I'm like, but that's not your boyfriend. Like, to me, it's very much, I understand that freeness in terms of if you're talking to somebody, and even if you're seeing someone on a very long-term basis, but you're not going out, I'm very much like, well, to me, again, it's like a mythical line between not being together and being together. So I can be very flexible and laid back. That all sounded completely wrong. I'm like, in every context, but in like, I can be flexible and laid back in terms of like whether, like you know, people like, yeah, that freedom in terms of like how you're allowed to behave with other people, and if you want to like talk to other people, see other people and stuff, if we're not officially together. And that can be everything from first date to like literally seeing each other to like basically being involved, because to me, exclusivity only really starts when you're going out. But then to me, once you're going out, it's like I wouldn't say I become a completely different person, but my brain, it's like a switch goes off and I'm like, right, so now we're in this for the long haul. Get your slippers on, get your his and hers, like, you know what I mean, like dressing gowns, because now we are here to do monogamy. And you know, I don't care how boring it is, whoever dies first, whoever dies last is the one that gets to thrive with other people. And beyond that, we're in this for the long haul, no matter how boring and tedious and sexless it may be. Hurrah. But yeah, maybe maybe I need a bit more money. But yeah, I think we're both definitely monogamy merchants when it really comes down to it.
I think it's just the society we're in, like, it's I even the whole thing of like, you know, it's a weird line, isn't it? Because it's the same way your children aren't your property, your man isn't your property, but
I'm like, record scratch, what? You sure that? I'm like, Elizabeth saying what? Wait, you got a... I'm like, wait a minute. Who am I talking to?
No, but I'm trying. I'm really trying to kind of like see this in a very like open-minded way. Because, you know, I am not the most like, you know, like, oh, flexible. I'm very... I don't want to use the word rigid. But I'm very traditional when it comes to this sort of stuff. But then, you know, but then don't I surprise you sometimes? Because sometimes
you
just
definitely
like,
do, yeah. Oh, sometimes you know, you're just on some next, like, left wing, like, not left wing, just left tip, where just like, yeah, anyway, actually, maybe I don't want that at all. And I'm like,
exactly.
What?
Sometimes I'll just go, oh, I don't think I want to get married. But it's so weird because I've seen someone for like a year and a half and everyone would be like, aren't you guys like boyfriend and girlfriend? And go, no, we're not
yeah,
boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. But then because I knew that if I want to be his girlfriend, I could have been his girlfriend, that I was so kind of open to just, you know,
seeing what happens.
But looking back, I do think it's a bit crazy to continuously see someone for like that long and there's no like sense of like, oh, is this going somewhere? But I think it's age,
it's not crazy when you're 21. Exactly.
True.
And you've got all the time and all the eggs and all the eggs in baskets, eggs in wombs, like eggs in just every flipping sense of the word to just waste time and just be like, whatever. Whereas like the older you get, like the more, I don't know. I think a lot of girls as well, like we tend to kind of like do this thing where, which I think neither you or I have ever really been into, where it's like there's a real pressure on women to like pretend we're up for things that we're not. So like there's that thing where you're like 21, you meet someone, you like them, they like you, but they're not ready for a relationship, so you kind of like force yourself to like feel like you're just called to go with the flow and like see what happens, when in reality you want to like formalize like you want a contractual like commitment. And you kind of feel like I think when you're younger, it's definitely like it's easier to kind of feel like you have to be cool with like situationships and stuff like that. Whereas like when you're older, it's like you kind of just don't, you just can't even pretend if that's not you. Because like, you know me, I was the queen of situationships. But you know, when I was younger, I was fully on that. Because like commitment genuinely, like, I don't know why, but it really like freaked me out as a concept. But now I'm older, I'm like, I just don't have the time. I don't have the bandwidth. And I just can't be bothered to like...
How interesting.
Yeah, I don't have the time. But I think for a lot of people, it's like they even when they're like, I had a lot of friends, definitely, that like when it came to like meeting guys and stuff, they'd like them and they'd potentially want something more. But they felt like if they articulated that, they'd scare them off. So then they felt like they had to like go with it, man, like be this cool person, man. But now they're like 27, 28, 29, 30. They're like, I actually don't care if you think I'm a flipping psychopath. I'm trying to get married in the next year. You know, if I get pregnant the first time we beat, I'm likely keeping the baby. What you got to say about that? And they're really just laying it out. And I think that's a good thing, that like, you know, we should be able to kind of just be honest about where we're at and what we want. And I think the older you get, the more comfortable you kind of feel doing that.
Absolutely. But it's weird. I think that's why we bonded like at uni, because we didn't have any issue in articulating like what we want, like our kind of opinions and stuff with guys when it comes to like, this is what I want. And I remember there was this guy at uni, to this day I still hate, but I remember I said to him like, this is what I like. He didn't text me all summer and it was just weird, and when he did text me it was just weird. This was like the first year of uni, and we got back to the first, like, you know, the first term, second year, and I remember him saying, I remember like me kind of like having a go at him about it, and then he said to me, don't give me the black girl chat. And I realized that day that obviously men are mad, but obviously, and also enough, I think as women, we're not expected to kind of articulate, especially at a young age, like, you know, boundaries and things like that. So so that's quite interesting. I have a question for you though. Around the August situation, number one, is she lying? Because she's come out to basically say he's lying, but I don't believe her.
Oh, wow. Maybe, I reckon there's truth to it.
Okay.
But maybe, because I haven't seen the statement, so I need to see what exactly she's denying. But I reckon that she's probably getting off on a technicality, you know, and it's like, this isn't murder, it's manslaughter. I think it's one of those loophole things where she's probably, I didn't have sexual relations with that woman. When we inquire what that means, it's like, oh, well, actually, that means something else. So I think I need to see what exactly how she denied it, but I would honestly bet my flipping bottom dollar that there's truth to what he said, but he's misinterpreted. She feels he's misrepresented it, because maybe it's something like he's presented it as an affair, when in reality it's like Will was more than aware of it and doing his own thing. Or maybe it was like they had a relationship that was like not sexual but something else, or it was sexual but nothing else. I bet there's a technicality that, like, because Jada just strikes me as real. I really don't know what it is about her, but she just really strikes me as someone that lives very unapologetically within her truth. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like, you know what, there's probably some truth to it, but it's probably, you know, it's not exactly, didn't go down exactly like that. It's like what had happened was, and it's going to be like, oh, this other kind of story where we're like, yeah, but you was basically, did you beat or not? That's what we're trying to get to. Did you beat or not? Oh. And I reckon the answer to that is yes, but
that when you're funny. Someone that's,
you know that's what I mean? What she's on some next spiritual plane. Exactly. That's all we care about. But she's on some higher level spiritual plane. She's just like, you mortals are out here wondering whose genitals went where, when it's more complex than that. There's more to it than that. So our next topic is the idea that loads of voice actors have been stepping down from various roles because of, I guess, the Black Lives Matter protest, general racism that's always pre-existed. But I think the actual, like, kind of spark for these moves has been the Black Lives Matter protest. Lots of white actors that have voiced, for in some cases, like, for decades, and black characters, the white voices behind them have decided to step down. So that's been Jenny Slate from Big Mouth, the guy who voices Cleveland on the Cleveland Show, who's been doing it for 20 years, the guy who voices Dr. Hibbert on The Simpsons, who's been doing it for longer, they're all stepping down. What do you think, Elizabeth, about the move? Because a lot of people are kind of saying that, like, yeah, white voice actors should never have been voicing black cartoon characters in the first place. Obviously it's interesting that after decades of, you know, collecting those checks, they have decided now that there's been a realization that it was wrong, if it was wrong. What are your thoughts on it? Do you have a dog in this fight, do you feel?
Yeah, the thing is, like, it just feels like such common sense that, like you said, like, it's like, what is the fight? Do you know what I mean? Like, it just feels so straightforward. Like, it makes sense. But I think because the world sees, like, white people, all the lens in which we do everything in this world is through white people, it's through whiteness, it's through, you know, being a man, like all of these things, that I'm glad that we're starting to really question things that have gone on kind of challenged for years. So absolutely, I think that, you know, we're seeing all these little, you know, people interrogating all these things, and I think it's a really good move that we're starting to move away from what we've always deemed as normal. So yeah, that I think that's honestly, that sums up my view on it. How about you? What are your thoughts around it?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think that, like, as you said, our starting point for everything is whiteness. So our starting point for even racialized characters is whiteness, which is strange. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I think that, like, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people have said that it's a version of, like, blackface, and, you know, it's equivalent. I honestly have to be real, and I don't know where I stand on that. And
which part,
I don't know.
Sorry?
Like, so some people sort of suggest that, like, white people voicing black cartoon characters is, like, equivalent to blackface, okay. Which I genuinely don't know, because I think blackface, sometimes, like, when we discuss what blackface is, like, blackface obviously, like, you know, is very much, like, leaning on, like, is, you know, there's obviously the literal, like, act of blacking yourself up and, like, using it to, like, basically portray, like, racialized and racist stereotypes of black people, and, like, I can completely understand the logic of why voicing black characters can be within that realm if you're having to, like, do you know what I mean? Because obviously, yeah, if you're voicing a black character, it's like there are often certain like stereotypes and, like, just, you know, like tropes that you may feel like you lean on to, you know, create that, the character of that voice. But then obviously it's weird, like with characters like Dr. Hibbert, I don't know if I feel, that's why, like, honestly, it's kind of a difficult one to really know where I know where I stand, but I to try and work out how I get to that conclusion, because I wouldn't necessarily say I've looked at Dr. Hibbert and been like, this is like a racist, like, parody of, like, blackness, because I didn't watch The Simpsons when I was younger, and you know, it's been a while because The Simpsons really turned to shit, but, like, yeah, like, I don't think I would necessarily think that now. I don't think, however, it has to necessarily be doing that for people to not feel like it's wrong. I think probably for me, where the kind of, like, real, same thing with cultural appropriation, to be honest, I feel like my real issue with most of these things is just the lack of opportunity. I don't know that if, like, you know, if I don't know if basically, like, there were loads of black actors voicing black parts and voicing, like, various parts, like in cartoons, in film, whatever, I don't know if I'd be as kind of like, this is something that like needs to change in this way. I think my biggest concern, to be honest, is always like the lack of opportunity and the fact that like white people get to depict themselves in cartoons and then also like get to depict black people in cartoons, which is imbued with a very problematic history anyway because of blackface. But in and of itself, I feel like in this time, you know, for instance, the character in Big Mouth wasn't necessarily like as far as I'm aware, no one was really complaining about the depiction. It's just more the fact that like, okay, but how many biracial women are actually like voicing cartoons as we speak? Same with like, there was a character in BoJack Horseman where, you know, an Asian character was voiced by a white woman. How many, do you know what I mean? Like, how many Asian women are voicing their, like, Asian characters that represent their own experiences, let alone white characters? Is you really don't see like a black, like a white cartoon, and you know, when you see the voice behind the cartoon, it's a like black person. It's just not a reality that we'd have to like contend with. So yeah, I think an easy way of arguing it would be like, oh, it's you know, a lot of these depictions are like stereotypical and like problematic. But I think the argument's almost more complicated because they're not always. With things like Apu from the Simpsons, yeah, it's like a very clearly like racialized and problematic like depiction, but they aren't always. But I think for me, one of the biggest issues lies in the fact that like, okay, but black people we're not even given the space to like represent ourselves. So where do we go from here? Like, if we can't even get like work representing like black cartoons, then do you know what I mean, let alone white ones, then it just means that like, yeah, again, we're relying on white people to kind of like represent and present the black experience. But yeah, I think as well, even like, I don't know, it's interesting because it's like we take issue with the voice characters, which I'm not saying we shouldn't, I completely understand that, but also again, it really just comes down to even things like writers' rooms, because I really can't imagine a black writer's room, or a writer's room that even had black people in it, being like, yeah, let's put this white person to voice this black character. Because they just be like, why? Do you know what I mean? Like, surely we just have a black person do it. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think it's just kind of like, it's the byproduct or outcome of a system that's systemically flawed from like the top to the bottom. So from the like casting to the writers to everything, that then means that we end up with like these absurdities where it's like there are loads of black characters are like represented visually in shows, but not like behind the scenes as voice actors in writers' rooms or anything else.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So our next topic is on the brand Boohoo, which has kind of blown up this week over allegations of low pay and poor conditions at the factory in Leicester. And I think as the latest is that, you know, Next and ASOS have dropped Boohoo's clothes from their websites after claims that the fashion retailer has sold clothes made in factories where staff were, you know, paid less than the minimum wage and essentially working in really poor conditions. And I think it shocked a lot of people because I think we think that this stuff happens in doesn't happen in England, and I think it's quite personal because, you know, we all over the years have, you know, used either Boohoo or sites like it, and, you know, and it kind of speaks to a bigger conversation around our relationship with fast fashion, and just, yeah, I think it's had to kind of, you know, be brought close to home for essentially people to really kind of, I guess, care about how clothes are made and, you know, who's making them and the conditions around that. What are your thoughts, Yomi, around this situation? So I know it's a kind of like fast moving situation, but what were your kind of thoughts when it first came out?
Yeah, I agree with you that, like, it's not something that we really think about, like, sort of taking place, like, pretty much on our own doorstep. And yeah, it's kind of like, it's been interesting to see how, like, you know, other brands have reacted, like with Next and ASOS kind of like distancing themselves from Boohoo as a brand. And I think it's going to be very much part of like a domino like effect, because we can't be under any illusions, and I feel like no one is, that like this is like an isolated like Boohoo only incident. It's probably likely that like it's affecting other fast fashion chains, and, you know, people with like companies like Next and ASOS, and I think Zalando like moving away from being affiliated with Boohoo and giving them like a platform and selling their stuff. It'll be interesting, I think, to see how like influencers and people that kind of like work in that space react, and whether they feel like a need to kind of like call them out, or not necessarily call them out, distance themselves from them. Because I do think that I'd be surprised if because obviously Boohoo like owns everything as well, I'm aware. Well, it's like Boohoo's is owned by people that own like loads of other like of like fast fashion brands. So I think it really could be like, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but it could be like the tip of the iceberg, and it'll be interesting to see the ramifications that has on the industry, because, you know, if that's the case, then I feel like it obviously affects loads of different chains. It affects loads of, it's just such a like flipping like hierarchy, because, you know, it affects the shops and like e-tailers that are like selling them like through like second party whatevers, but then also like, as I said, like influencers, will they kind of have to like comment on this, or like will they turn a blind eye, like, do you know what I mean? How do they kind of,
yeah, I think that it reminded me how much power that as consumers we have when it comes to holding brands, especially fashion brands, to account. This whole situation reminded me of like years ago when footballs essentially were being made as like the actual football, in football games, being made in like kind of like over like, I guess, sweatshops in, you know, other parts of the world. And there was a stand that took, there was, you know, a campaign against that. So the leather football that, you know, you could buy, but also was used in, you know, big Premier League games and like Champions Leagues, were being made like in, you know, abroad with, you know, really bad work conditions. And it took like a dedicated campaign for that to be kind of overturned. So when it comes to, you know, consumer power, I think you see that a lot. I don't think it always, you know, is across the board of a lot of things, but there is such consumer power in how we can, and yeah, as consumers, be more conscious in our where we put our money. So I think it reminded me of that kind of campaign, because the Premier League and all these, like, you know, the like football is kind of better off because of that. And I think that, I hope this isn't kind of like a, you know, a flash in the pan, and it's, people are, you know, a nice pretty statement by Boohoo and even ASOS. Like, there is, nobody is exempt from this situation. I feel like we've created this monster of fast fashion, and we've all kind of partaken in it in various ways. You know, if you're going into Primark, it's crazy, because I couldn't wait to go to Primark when it opened, because I was like, oh my God, I need this. And do you know what's interesting as well? My mum lives in Paris, and over the years, like, people in Europe have a very different relationship with like with clothes compared to England. So in Paris, and I know if anybody wants to, you know, can't know, think, say I'm wrong, but they have a very different culture in Europe and in France when it comes to like shops like Primark and things like that. They don't have that kind of you buy a three pound t-shirt and you buy it again 2 weeks time because, you know, you put it in a washing machine and it kind of, you know, unthreads and things like that. So I don't know what, I think we have a very different culture when it comes to, and not just, you know, boohoo and what we buy on, like, you know, I need a £5 dress to go out, but also just, you know, what our local high street looks like. And I don't think as consumers, we interrogate why a t-shirt costs £5 enough. And I think that it had to be in somewhere like Leicester, which is what, an hour and 2 hours away from London, or 2 hours, it's so close to us, that for people to realise how really disgusting these practices are. I don't know, like it's I don't know, has your relationship with fashion changed, I guess, over the years?
Yeah, I'd say definitely. I was actually talking about this the other day. Like, I feel like one thing I'm very grateful for is that I've never particularly been very trend led. Primarily because I just couldn't afford it. Like, growing up, it was like, if everyone was like, oh, we've got kickers today, even though kickers are very actually sturdy, quite pricey when I was younger, like shoes. But when people was like, oh, we've got kickers today, we've got TNs tomorrow, like, I couldn't really afford to just be constantly like, okay, it's UGG boots now, and then it's those other butter shoes that I can't remember what they're called, but they had the
Wallabies.
Oh my god, I remember Wallabies. Not Wallabies, these were boots here, but they had like buckles, like they had like straps around them and buckles. They were just horrendous.
Oh,
but
I know those ones.
You know,
yeah.
Them ones? Yeah, yeah. They're like, kind of, sometimes they were suede and like brown, and sometimes like tan, and sometimes they were like black, but they were clapped either way. But I remember at the time I thought they were it. And I used to buy them from those, like, this was like I think these are the things that kind of, the like primordial goop from which like fast fashion was formed. But you know, those like high street, like kind of below risky stores, like the stores that were kind of the real, like really cheap. Like, I used to buy like lots of like super cheap stuff from that, which was like the knockoffs of the knockoffs of the knockoffs, basically. But like, I guess like being frugal meant that like I wasn't really like a trend led person, because I was like, I can't afford to constantly like be keeping up with like what everyone's wearing. So it made me a bit more like, I don't know, it made me a bit more frugal anyway. And I was obsessed with like, I'm not like, I don't know, it's weird, I've never been like a super like, oh my god, fashion like person, but I was really into like staples. Like, I remember I was always like, okay, if I buy this thing now, can I get away with wearing this in like another like 5 years? And that all kind of went out the window when I got to uni, because obviously it was like, oh my god, I'm away from home, I've got my own money, and like, even though I'm still broke, like at least I'm in control of the money. So I was just like, I'm just going to like live in Primark and just like buy so much shit in bulk like all the time. Because even before, when I used to shop in cheaper places, I didn't really buy like loads of stuff, whereas like by the time I got to uni, it was very much, I'm literally wearing this dress once, we're gonna take a picture in it, and then I don't even know, it's not like I'll throw it away, it's very much, where did it go? To this day, I'm like, it's like they evaporate. It's literally like they serve their purpose. Like, you know, there's a thing in Rick and Morty where they have these things called Mr. Meeseeks, where they're created to do a task and then they disappear. That's what my fast fashion clothes were like. It's like, I would literally try to find a dress that I'd spent like £6 on, and then it's like I'd look for it and it'd just be gone, because it's like, oh, you wore it on that night out, it's done, like, bye. So literally, like, all those clothes, I could not even tell you where the hell they've gotten to. They've probably literally turned to rubble because of what they're made out of. But like, now I'm older, it's kind of like I'm back to how I was like in like secondary school, which is just that, like, again, I'm not massively like trend led. I'm very much like, I like this thing and I can imagine myself liking this thing for quite a sustained period of time. And I wouldn't even say my original kind of push for that was like being ethical, honestly. It was just kind of like frugality, and just also, I don't really like having too much stuff in my house. So just trying, like, you know, as Nigerians, we like to hoard. I think that's just like that's just an African thing, I think. We just like to hoard stuff and like keep things. So I'm like, I've for a long time been trying to like turn away from that. But because I know that like, I don't have the space in my bedroom to like just have bare clothes that I'm not going to wear. So like, yeah, but now I'm like even more trying to be a bit more conscious and wary of being like, you know, like, I think I told you when there was that whole no shops November, like no shop September movement, I was saying to you like, what people, it was like, oh, we're gonna try and like, we endeavor not to buy anything for the whole of September. I was like, there's people that buy things every month, like what? I was like, that's not how I live. That's not how I've ever lived. But now I think I'm even more conscious of not living like that. But to be fair, we do get sent a lot of stuff, and now I'm trying to make sure I actually like repurpose that as well, and like actually like send that to places and make sure again that that's not part of a cycle of like wastefulness. In terms of you, where do you sort of feel like you fit into that, and like do you feel like now with like stuff like Boohoo, like, and this conversation around like, you know, like having to be mindful about like our like clothes, where we buy them from, but also like how they're made and stuff, do you feel a bit more conscious now about like what you buy and like from where and stuff?
Yeah, I think I don't know, I feel like I've always kind of known that this, like, my attitude towards clothes is not a good one, it's not a sustainable one. So I have this thing where like I'll wear something, you know, a couple of times, and this is a running joke between Yomi and I, that it becomes like house clothes. So I don't necessarily, you know, throw them away, but I kind of, you know, relegate them to stuff I would wear in the house or down, you know, going down to the local shops or anything, but not wear like properly. And then I'll just buy new clothes to replace that, which isn't great. And it's something that I definitely want to kind of, you know, I was looking at my wardrobe the other day and I was like, I have too much stuff and I definitely need to kind of go down that minimalist route, which is just much, much healthier. And this is, you know, buy something good once, the quality, and you don't have to keep buying over again. So I'm definitely, because I'm, you know, older, trying to be more mindful with that. And I think this story around Boohoo and the factories in Leicester has definitely, I guess, yeah, has definitely kind of exacerbated that feeling of like, Elizabeth, you know, your relationship with clothes isn't probably the best. You described someone that basically, you know, buys clothes every quite often throughout, and that's, I'm definitely one of those people. There's a friend of mine who runs an app called a company called Buy Rotation, and it's all about, you know, peer-to-peer lending. Peer-to-peer renting of clothes. And I remember when, you know, I first met her, I admired what she was doing, but it's just something that it resonated with me whatsoever. And I guess December, it's taken me, I would say, even before this situation with, you know, Boohoo, to kind of come round to actually wearing someone else's clothes, not as a, you know, as like a, I'm renting it. Like it's a weird, and I think that fashion and all of that sort of stuff is gonna go down that route, because we waste way too much, like from food, from clothes to shoes to, and like you said, when you get sent stuff, it's just, everything is disposable. And I'm just, it's a sad day when this is happening, because people are getting paid like below minimum wage, and it's just so not good enough. It's not good enough from Boohoo. I don't want to see a pretty statement that, you know, that they're really looking at their supply chains. I'm happy that, you know, ASOS and Next have re-looked at, they're saying they're dropping their clothes out, but also ASOS need to look at how they're doing their stuff as well. Everybody, there's chains of just, you know, complicity that we all kind of, you know, have contributed to. So I'm very happy this conversation is happening, but it's sad that, you know, there are people in this country who are getting paid £3.50 per hour and they feel like they have to be paid that. So it's quite shocking, and I think it's definitely gonna hopefully change people's opinion.
So now it's time for Slay in the Week. I feel like it's been a while since we've had a positive one. So this is definitely like a welcome one. So our Slay of the Week is Jedidiah Duyile, who runs Loud Brand Studios, and her PR, Aman Layla. They've had an incredible few days. Essentially, Polly, I'm gonna call you Polly because that's her nickname, guys, but you already know that. What's the story? Why has their week been so good the past few days?
So it's quite crazy because I haven't been online that much, but every time I did go on yesterday, there was this story that just kept on gathering momentum. And it was a story of a London-based designer, as Yomi said, who's dress was being worn by Kylie Jenner, And first and foremost, so she, you know, Kylie's taken this beautiful, beautiful like image.
She looks hot. I was literally like, fair enough, girl. She actually looked really good.
Her boobs were just, I actually was like, wow. Like, she just looked like,
it was really just looking great.
And that dress just made her look amazing. Like, it just, yeah, it just felt like a great partnership of just like, I'm wearing this dress. So she basically wore this beautiful dress, and it was from, you know, London-based fashion designer. And it kind of blew up. People were saying, why aren't you tagging Loud Brand Studios? People accusing Kylie's mom, Kris Jenner, of essentially like blocking blessings, essentially, of people not essentially because people were tagging in the comments Loud Brand Studios. And so then Kylie was accused publicly, from my understanding, of not only tagging the brand in her actual picture, but then deleting and removing comments that tags the brand also. So that kind of went super viral, because it became, you know, we've just come out of, you know, people really kind of holding brands to account around, you know, black creators and things like that. So and by come out of, I don't mean people forgotten, but, you know, we've kind of hit the, I would say, peak of it, essentially. So people obviously still have that energy and was like, okay, cool, why aren't you tagging this brand? Long story short, Kylie came out and was like, what are you guys talking about? Not only do I love this brand, like, I've never essentially like would go out of my way to kind of, you know, block their blessings and not tag them. And the brand has been featured everywhere. The whole story has kind of like gone super viral. And, you know, Iman Layla, who is a PR influence manager, has been kind of like behind getting her visibility, getting the brand and the brand and the fashion designer visibility across like everything from Vogue to literally Daily Mail and all of these different platforms. So it was a brand a couple of days ago I'd never heard of, and it's a brand now that is on the top of everybody's mind. So it's amazing that, you know, there's two black women that are part of this and are, you know, that have, you know, essentially kind of created this kind of mad amazing experience.
And one thing that I think was really, really amazing was the fact that, like, obviously there was a lot of kind of like, obviously a lot of people sort of tagging Kylie and sort of like, you know, getting ready to drag. And I think what was really good about how the situation was handled is that Loud Brand Studios and Iman and Jedediah made sure it was just all positivity. Like, they made sure that they didn't kind of hop on that wave of like pushing it into negativity and being like, oh, why aren't we being tagged? Like, the internet kind of had its stance and kind of was like, you know, really kind of like getting annoyed and stuff. And I'm not even saying that like that's the wrong thing, I guess, but I think it was really amazing that they kind of like continue to push positivity, and that obviously the situation was resolved, but throughout it they were very gracious and very like, just, yeah, like they were just very gracious throughout. And I think that is like the key to like to good PR, because it can be very easy to get like wrapped up in what like Twitter's saying and kind of like start dragging Kylie as well, so that she deletes the picture. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like the way that they handled it was very much like just, oh, like, love to everybody for having our back. Also love to Kylie for wearing the dress, which was a very good like kind of response. So like, yeah, shout out to them. And literally, I mean, I would say let's go and come on, Elizabeth, for our next outing, let's go and get our dresses. But I think it's sold out. I think it's sold out now. But I'm like, definitely gonna sign up and subscribe so I can get my notifications for when it's next in stock, because like I don't have those boobs. They don't sit quite like that. But like, you know, I'm not gonna lie, girl's gonna try, because that is a look. So yeah,
definitely. Cool, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Let us know if you have any feedback and your thoughts on what we've discussed today. I've been Elizabeth Ifebenene.
And I've been Yomi Edogake. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.